Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Artist First World Radio Network, home of the best new music you've never heard, and home of the best new talk shows you need to hear. Please don't forget to visit our archives page at www.artistfirst.com, where you can hear all our past shows for free and on demand. You were tuning in to Chit Chat Cafe Live. This show airs every Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. For more information about this show and to listen to past shows for free, please visit artistfirst.com/chitchat.htm. And don't forget to follow Artist First on Twitter. You can find us under the Twitter handle at @artist_first. And now here are your hosts of Chit Chat Cafe Live, Nancy and Lisa.
Hi, everyone. I'm Nancy. Corey, thank you for that great introduction every week. We just love it. It's time for Chit Chat Cafe Live on Artist First World Radio Network. Oh, it's a great time to relax and unwind and enjoy some chit chat. We're very happy you joined us tonight. We're excited to talk with Dr. Stephen Craig, who's a nationally known psychologist. He's our first guest, and later in the show, our correspondent Betty Ann Martino joins us to talk with Peggy Tanis from the hit Bravo TV show, The Housewives of D.C. So tonight, it's all about wives. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Nancy.
Oh, my gosh. I missed you last week when you were in Spain. We're going to talk about that later.
Yeah, I can't believe that was a week ago. Time flies so fast. My God.
I know. I just
was... It's the middle of April already.
Every night, I was clicking on the Facebook to see if I could see pictures from beautiful Madrid.
And I put a lot on the other night. What, I put like almost 200 of them.
I loved them. You know what I realized? Lisa, when I was done, I clicked and commented on every single picture. So we are going to update everyone on your trip
Travel
at the end of the show.
Yep. Yep.
So lots of interesting things going on in the news right now. Oh, I'm just praying. I still just keep Trayvon Martin's parents in my prayers. They're such strong people.
Oh, what a nightmare. What a nightmare.
Yes.
It's the same. People are crazy. People are crazy. It's unbelievable.
I'm not even sure if all the Mega Million winners have come through yet.
Oh, I don't know. You know what?
I'm not sure.
I'm so out of it. I haven't watched the news.
Really?
I'm usually a news buff. I love watching
right.
it. But, you know, we got home late. Monday night, I still have jet lag, and then, you know, I had to go to work early Tuesday morning, and then I was away Wednesday, you know, Thursday. I just
you've been working.
Yeah, a lot of working. So I just haven't really been following. I did see, however, Mark Anthony filed for divorce from J-Lo.
Oh, boy.
And
I've actually seen her hot and steamy new dance video, the music video with her choreographer, very steamy.
Is she having an affair with him?
I'm not sure, but if that's true, it's a really steamy dance number, and it's lots of fun. The song is fun.
She's gorgeous. She is absolutely stunning. I think she's one of the most beautiful women in showbiz.
I know. I love all of her movies. Well, we're also sharing prayers and offering our condolences to Mike Wallace, who passed away this week, and his family.
Yeah. He was, what, 93 years old?
Yes.
That's a shame.
Well, let's get right to it, Lisa. I'm
okay,
so
cool.
excited tonight.
Yep. Dr. Stephen.
What? Yes, yeah, our whole show about wives. Okay, we'll talk a little bit about husbands, but we're going to really focus in on the wives. Tonight, Dr. Stephen Craig, who is an internationally recognized psychologist, he's also a corporate coach and host of Therapy Thursday on Detroit's 96.3 WDVD radio. He's appeared on ABC's World News Tonight, as well as the New York Times, Newsweek, Good Housekeeping, and tonight we're going to talk about a book that he shared with us, The Six Husbands All Wives Should Have. Welcome, Dr. Stephen Craig.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be on it, on the show today.
Well, we're just thrilled. We just love your book. And, you know, when we first heard about it, the title is so catchy. You know, we're thinking right away, oh, what are you talking about, husbands? How many are you supposed to have?
It's amazing, the number of people who see that title and rush to the book because they think, finally, I get to have six different husbands.
Right.
Or that they think, oh, no, I can't even handle one.
And, you know, today with all the marriages that are in trouble, from friends that we know to celebrities, We can all learn from your book and advice making marriage a success. So thank you very much for sharing your book with us. So to get started, I like that you broke your book down into six different stages.
Yes.
Now, stage number one is a good one, getting started. You share in your book to look for honesty with the husband-to-be. Oh, this is good. Who ought to be a good catch. And the wife needs to be the girl of my dreams. Could you tell us more about this?
Well, before we do that, I just briefly should say the reason I set it into six sections is because what I'm trying... Obviously, you shouldn't... I'm not saying you should have six different husbands. What I'm saying is that the guy in any marriage, the guy I needed to be in my 20s is very different than the guy I need to be in my 30s, which is different than the guy I need to be in my 40s. And that marriages don't fail because people change. They fail because they don't change. So when we go through each of these stages that you're talking about, what I'm really doing is setting up and saying, okay, in each stage of marriage, we really need to be a different person. So our communication needs change, intimacy changes, our needs change. So let's go through each stage and talk about really if we're going to evolve and change with our spouse, what that would look like. So when you say the first one, the good catch, really we're talking about at that stage is the first stage of marriage occurs before you even get married. This is the stage where you're determining if you're even marryable. And what I mean by that is so many people get married for the wrong reasons. They meet someone and they say, well, he or she, you know, we share the same music or we have the same friends, when really you should be evaluating on who they are as people. So to answer your question about the good catch, that guy, okay, so you're in love with him, but he should really be somebody who is mature. He's grown up. We call him the good catch because he's really become someone who knows how to really understand what commitment is, what maturity is, what... how to argue fair and to, you know, compromise and all the things that really make a relationship work. And so that's the key to the good catch guy. He's more than just a nice guy.
That is very true. So everyone who's dating, think about all those things and make sure that he's strong enough for you. Moving on to stage two, the young married couple. Oh, remember those days? Full of hopes and dreams. What do you have to share for advice with the young married couple in stage two?
Well, one thing I would say to set this up is that we have to look at our marriage not as a marathon, but as a decathlon, that it's not one thing that we go on forever and trudging through, like a lot of people say. It's different. Different stages require different skills. So in this stage, after you got married, now you're joining your lives together. And so the best husband of this person has become a team player. He now understands that the skills at this stage are putting the marriage and this relationship first so that, you know, weeding out the influences of his family and his friends and how he always thought things should be in life. This guy has to be saying, we're making a union together. Let's decide things together for us. That's what makes him a good catch at that stage. And the wife would be the same thing if we want to talk about that. That she has to be putting the relationship first, too.
Now, with your research for your book, are you finding that it's easier for the men or the women to fall into this stage?
To fall into this stage?
Or, you know, who is easier, you know, to be more adaptable?
Well,
is it the women who want the men to adapt to their way, in other words?
Well, I would say in general... You know, if we were very generalized, women tend to be easier at changing than men. Men are more reluctant to change. But it's often situational because you often find a lot of women who don't want to change. But in general, so, you know, to speak in the generalities, there's a whole lot of men who are really socialized in our world that change is bad. That, you know, you can't get, if you get married, all of a sudden you've given up everything and you need to hold on to exactly who you've been. So they say things like, they come in my office and say, but she knew what I was like when she married me. That's the guy she loved. Why would I change? I don't need to change. And so they're really stuck on the fact of that anything else is selling out. And so, yes, I think men have a more difficult time in general.
And do you also find with your practice that some of the fighting starts at this pre-marriage stage over the expense of wedding?
Oh, you get so much arguing going on at that stage. And really what that is the beginning of that second stage of how well you can negotiate the different opinions of everyone's family. So that's, you really start it. Once you start planning a wedding, now we have to try and make everybody happy. What does your mom want? What does my mom want? What does my family want? How are we going to negotiate those things? Because if we don't do that well, we're not really setting the stage for doing the rest of the negotiating we need to do well.
Well, that's very true. Now, with stage three, this is a wonderful time in everyone's life. Then comes baby. Are you finding that with your research and the couples that you speak to? What is the average time that couples wait prior to welcoming the baby? Is it a few years or more than a few?
Well, in general, people tend to have babies in about 2 to 5 years after they get married. Obviously, some are sooner and some are later, but that would be the prime area, the prime time. But again, I would say it's amazing how much difficulty occurs as we enter a new stage like this. Because, you know, as you see in the book, there's all these fun stories of how babies, you know, we start to get in arguments and the baby doesn't sleep and we're not able to handle it. And it's really the couple. It's not the baby that causes the problem. You know, they're cute things. They might cry, but we can deal with that. It's how our needs and expectations as spouses have changed. And that's where we run into the trouble.
And what advice do you have for couples at this stage?
At this stage, it's so much about controlling the chaos. So that if we wanted to go through the ideal spouses at this stage, the best husband at this stage is an ally. He's a guy who understands that he's a co-conspirator in what we've created here. And I don't mean to act like all babies turn everything into a nightmare, because it's a wonderful process too. It's just that all of a sudden there's so much chaos going on about diapers and changing and noise and not sleeping and a new completely dependent person. This husband has to realize that it's his job to help out in any way he can. And the woman's role is to also manage that well too, to sort of be a chaos control manager. These are the years we just have to figure out how to get by and still love each other. And sometimes that's
exactly
pretty hard.
Exactly.
Then what about when, after you have the kids, and the kids are 7, 8 years old, and mom's running them all around, and, you know, you become preoccupied with the kids, making lunches and running them to soccer and, you know, all that.
So I'm going to call that the family ties years, and that's a new stage. Mm-hmm. And what happens here is this is a stage where a lot of people get divorced. And it's not simply because they've been with each other for enough years that they're now tired of each other. It's because, as you said there, so much is happening at that stage. Where the kids have homework and school and friends and parties and soccer games, and we have work and friends and career and, all this stuff that's happening. At that stage, if the couples haven't worked out the problems of the previous stages, so, you know, we're not working well as a team, we weren't a good couple when we had babies, by now, they're just tired of each other. Because you have to, through each stage, work well together. So at this stage, because we're required to carry so much on our plate, like I call the ideal wife, the chief operations officer, she is running a big organization and she's got to get it all going. Anything that we haven't dealt with in our life, like if somebody had a drinking problem, it was cute when they first got married, drank too much, it was kind of a pain when we had kids, but now I can't take him anymore. He's got to fix it. That's the problems at this stage.
Then what about the empty nest stage? That's what Nancy and I are going through right now.
Well, what's so key in the empty nest stage is, again, now we have a different stage of marriage where we have different expectations, different needs, different communication. And in the chapters of the book, it outlines what those are. But the key at this stage is to rejuvenate the relationship. So much has been poured into family, and I'm just talking about a traditional family, but has been poured into the kids and the family life, that we have to be people who say, I'm going to rekindle this relationship. I have to make us a team again. And this means that you take on new things and new hobbies and new activities that you never thought you would, but you have to find ways to reconnect. And really, people should start doing this before they reach that stage. Because if the kids get married or go off to college and you haven't started the foundation of that, all of a sudden you have a giant hole in your lives. So the people who rejuvenate well actually start when the kids hit the teenage years.
Because I had heard the divorce rate is more prevalent now, you know, the empty nest stage.
Well, the two highest ones are the empty nest stage and the family tie stage. And the family tie stage is what I said before, because they just are, it's issues they haven't worked through become too much of a burden. But often they don't get divorced there because they still have young kids around. So either they had the problems then and they get divorced in the empty nest years, or the problems show up in the empty nest years because for so long they haven't been connecting and growing together that at this point the kids are gone and they don't have anything between them. And that's why those two stages are the heaviest of divorce.
Now tell us about stage six, the golden years. Is that when your parents are getting older?
That's when your parents are getting older. And the best thing I can say about this stage is when I first started writing this book, I did a speech for a group of women who were all in their 70s and 80s and a little older, and I talked to them all about how important change was through the years. And this speech for years has had great rave reviews and everyone loved it, but I did it for the Golden Years group, and you could hear a pin drop. Nothing. And then they started saying, I don't want any change. All I want is my husband is dead or dying, or my husband's gone, or he's deaf. The last thing they wanted at this stage was change. And that's when I started doing more research about this group and thinking about it. And what's so key at this stage is no more changes. I need to know you're my companion. You're here through thick or thin. You're the person who loves me even if I lose some of my faculties. And you're the person, you're steady, you're with me right now. So the companionship at that age is the steady companionship is huge. And the ideal spouse at that stage really is that companion. You and me are hooked together no matter what happens. That's what keeps that stage alive. And many people get divorced at that stage because they realize their partner isn't really a companion, won't be there through the difficult times.
Well, interesting research. I like the way that your book is set up, and you also have some questions at the end to help make changes. You talk about remembering that all marriages and all people are different. Tell us some interesting stories, of course, confidentially. Anything so that it would help our listeners in case they're thinking, oh, that sounds like me. What do you see mostly coming in to your practice? What are they fighting about or talking about?
Most of the people come in the stage two or stage three when they're newly married or when they have young kids. And so often you get sort of what I was saying before is, let's say, the 32-year-old guy who says, she knew what I was like when she married me. She knew I liked to drink beer and hang out with my friends and watch all seven games of the NBA finals. And I mean, he's holding on to that tight, but what I always have to say to them is, but didn't you, so you weren't ever going to grow up? Like, that was it? You stopped at age 22? And it really strikes him because he thinks that he's supposed to hold on, but now he has a wife and two kids at home. You can't be doing that. And often I say to these guys, I go, I like to look at myself as a stock on the stock market. That when my wife married me, she was buying low and hoping I would grow and mature through the years. And who would keep a stock around that didn't grow, didn't mature through the years? So to answer your question is, there's so many couples who come in with either the fact that he said he wasn't going to change and that change is ridiculous, or that you have a lot of women who have either changed so many times in trying to adapt to everything that they've lost themselves. They've gone from college co-ed to hardworking woman to newlywed to mom, that they've sort of lost who they are. They've changed so much that they haven't changed together. And so that's a common thing we get. The other thing we get is when they're after they're newly married and you have all the conflicting family things going on. So, for example, he'll marry his wife, and they've been married a year, but his mother will still come over and clean the house and do the dishes and do the laundry and be completely involved in their married lives, and he can't tell her to get out. He's, you know, and the same thing often, you know, with women too, but just the sort of intrusion of the rest of our family and friends in our marriage that people don't know how to negotiate well. Those are the two prime things.
Do you see more satisfaction in a marriage if there's no children?
I wouldn't say more satisfaction. I would say most of the research says that people who have children report more satisfaction. But I think it's more about finding something this is too clinical way to say it, but a shared project. Whether it's a child, whether it's a house, whether it's pets, people have to have something to bond over and grow and mature and build through life, you know, sort of water it if it were a plant. And what makes people satisfied, it's not the kids, it's the shared goal. It's the shared experience of working through something together. And so it's really not a matter of married or not or kids or not. It's if you can find something to your shared project.
Very interesting research. I like in the book how you give demonstrations or examples of active listening.
Yes.
Without active listening and with active listening. For those of our listeners who haven't read your book yet, could you explain that?
I think in the book I give a great example of how couples who don't do it well, how it goes apart really quickly. So, you know, what active listening is slowing down and really checking with each other about what is being said. So instead of, I think I give the example of one time because I was a young, stupid married guy, I forgot to take the garbage out. And I go through this example of that I crawl into bed on a stormy night at midnight, and of course I've forgotten to take the garbage out again for the 10th week in a row. And my wife says, have you taken it out? And I say no, but I go charge out in the pouring rain and I take it out. I come back soaking wet, as if to make my point, I get into bed all wet. And you know, and I think, haha, that'll show her, which of course led to a bigger fight. But the problem was, we didn't do any good active listening. She didn't, you know, when she says, did you take the garbage out, I can't just get defensive. You're always leaning on me. You're nagging. I don't know. I have to learn and go, what is it that I hear you saying I haven't taken the garbage out? What point is it that you want me to understand? And we would go back and forth with an example in the book about, let me figure out what she means, and here's what I hear. Is that what you're saying? And we would go back and forth and actually communicate well and understand what her point is and my point is, rather than me storm out and go out in the rain and take the garbage out. And that's what people do all the time, and they call that communication, and it's really not very good communication.
Well, what is your best advice to communicate through all the stages?
My best advice to communicate throughout the stages starts from the fact that you have to accept that you're going to change, that successful marriages make all those changes. So in order to do it well, you have to be embracing the idea that you're always going to change and that change is a good thing. So the best advice is, as you continue to grow and meet different stages, always ask yourself and your spouse, what has changed? What do you need from me now? What's different in your life how can I be different now than I was before? Not that we have to change entirely. Sometimes I call it like a tree. You know, as a tree grows and changes, it just gets more branches and gets fuller. It doesn't, you know, the old tree doesn't go away. And to recognize that at each stage, how can I be different? And how do I need you to be different? And if people go into each stage of marriage asking those questions about each other, they learn to grow and change together instead of trying to resist it.
Well, I love those ideas, and we're highly recommending Dr. Stephen Craig's book, The Six Husbands Every Wife Should Have. Dr. Craig, would you join us again on another night on Chit Chat Cafe Live?
Absolutely, I'd love to.
We would love that, and we're going to tune in to listen to your Therapy Thursdays.
Okay, great.
Thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Okay.
Good night.
Thank you. Good night.
You're welcome.
Good night.
Bye.
Very interesting book.
Mm-hmm.
I liked his research. Well, we're thanking our sponsor, St. Croix Orthopedics, and we're taking a quick commercial. Stay with us. Betty M. Martino is going to join us to chat with Peggy Tanis from Housewives of D.C., the hit Bravo TV series.
Now back to Chit Chat Cafe Live on the Artist First World Radio Network.
Well, hello everyone. This is Betty Ann, and I would like to introduce our guest tonight. She's a wife, a mother of two, a model, spokesmodel, and a housewife on the Bravo hit reality show, The Real Housewives of Ocean County. I'd like to introduce the beautiful Peggy Tanis. Welcome, Peggy.
Hi, Betty Ann. Thank you so much. And it's actually Orange County.
Oh, my. We've been really messing up tonight.
It's a Thursday. It happens. It's fine.
I know.
For the weekend.
Well, you know, Betty Ann lives. She lives near Ocean City, New Jersey in the summer. That's why she's thinking ocean.
Yes.
Oh, because she just has to hurry up and get down to the ocean.
We call it OC. It's the same thing. Oh, that's hysterical.
Well, thanks for having me, ladies. I'm happy to be here tonight.
Oh, I'm so excited to have a chance to chat with you. I'm like the housewife's junkie. So I love to watch all of the different housewife shows on Bravo. And this is really exciting. So how did you first become involved with the show?
Actually, the second season that they were on air, I was filming an infomercial because I come from a background of doing a lot of hosting and modeling. And one of the producers on there had asked me if I'd be interested in trying out at that point. And I had just gotten married and thought, oh, gosh, and reality wasn't that big back then. So I was like, oh, I don't know if that'd be something good to do, you know, for a newly married couple. And then it ended up being that they wanted to have all the wives in Coda de Casa. So that just went away, and I didn't even know the show was still on. And then Alexis got on it, and we were friends. And so last year when they were casting, she called me and said, hey, you know what, the show's casting. You should think about trying out. And so I had gone through the postpartum depression with both my girls and was really missing being in the entertainment business because I had taken, you know, time off to have the babies. And and I thought, you know, I don't know, maybe I still didn't think I'd want to do reality. And I thought, well, I don't know. And she talked it up and, you know, told me all the good points and the bad points, and it didn't seem like it was so bad. And so we ended up getting a call from one of the producers, and there I was on the show. and now I've left.
Well, I did read that, and I was, like, a little disappointed. I saw you on one of the recent shows. It was kind of, like, more, you weren't really on the whole show. You kind of, like, were there for a little bit. And I wasn't going to bring up the subject of Alexis right away, but how is your friendship? Is it still on the rocks? Have you mended your, you know, friendship, or is it over?
No, unfortunately, it's over. But it really, what people didn't realize was behind the scenes, our friendship really started to deteriorate before we even started filming last season. So she really wasn't happy. You know, she had originally told me to try out for the show, but then she, I guess, second-guessed it and really didn't want me on the show and had told several of our friends that, you know, she would want to quit if I got on it. So when I heard those things, it was really hurtful, and I didn't understand why would she tell me to get on it and then all of a sudden, you know, not want me on it. And then, you know, her husband obviously hadn't told her that we had gone out in the past, you know, a billion years ago. And so then when I did get the show, he had to, you know, he felt like he had to tell her in case it was ever to come out. And so then that caused, you know, obviously some bad feelings on her end. Which I tried to talk to her about before we ever filmed, and she just wouldn't. So then once we started filming, it was like the friendship was already kind of deteriorated, but we had to kind of like put on this facade for the show. And we never, but, you know, I told her, I will never bring up any of this on the show because it wasn't to me. It was so long ago, and we're both married women, and it's, you know, it's really not necessary. And then it did end up coming out like right before the reunion show. I think somebody had tweeted Andy about it on his show. And so then we did have to bring it up on the reunion show. And that was, you know, part of my decision when I left this season was because that's all they really wanted is more drama with that. And I looked at it like, you know, we're both married women. We both have children. And, you know, it was such an insignificant, I wouldn't even call it a relationship. It was, you know, I went out casually with, you know, Jim so long ago that it wasn't even mentioned, you know, worth mentioning. And so when we started negotiating for this season, when I got my contract and I was asked to come back and my husband and I started negotiating, they were very adamant about, you know, you're going to have to really basically, you know, bring the drama this year. And you know, they kept saying they wanted more of the backstory on the whole, you know, Jim thing. And to me, I really, you know, and beyond just also, financially, some of the, you know, with the contract, I wasn't happy with it. So it came to a point where I just felt like, you know, I had a great first season and I kept my integrity and I came off, you know, as a good person that I am. And I felt like it got me back in the business, but it was better for me to, at that point, just move on and, you know, continue on with my hosting and modeling and things that I can empower women and stay positive and happy and not be forced to fight.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because I'm sure they were trying to make it much more than it was so they could add more drama to the show and make a whole storyline out of it, and it, you know.
Of course. And
make it more interesting.
And I get it, too, because, you know, now I have a new show coming out, and I'm co-producing it, and I get that. You need to get the drama. You need to have, you know, some mm-hmm. of that to have people interested. But to be actually in it yourself, I just, you know, I didn't feel that it was something, it wasn't the right format for me. I think, you know, some women, it's great, and they've taken it, you know, very far. And, I mean, Vicky's, you know, this is now her seventh season, so for her it worked. But also, I think a lot of the women that do these shows, you know, they've never been in the industry before, whereas for me, I had a full career, and this is what I did. So I just didn't want to get pigeonholed as just a housewife. I want to be able to continue my career down the road.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think it was an excellent move on your part.
Thank you.
Especially since I mean, you know, you have so much going on. One thing I wanted to bring up before we move away from the housewives, I know that during the season, you spoke a lot about your holistic lifestyle and how you use that to deal with your postpartum depression. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I learned about homeopathy, gosh, when I was probably about 24 years old, through an ex-boyfriend of mine, and his best friend was a homeopathist, and just fell in love with the whole concept of it, and you know, was very healthy anyhow, but just then adopted the whole homeopathy outlook. And then when I met Micah, it was so ironic that here his mother was a homeopathic doctor. And so when I had London, I didn't, you know for the first year, I didn't feel right. I knew something was off, but I didn't want to admit it. And as a mother, you always feel like, you know, you don't want to be judged, or you don't want to like admit, like, maybe I'm not being the best mom, or maybe, you know, I'm, as a new mom, I should be happy. I shouldn't be having these feelings. So I kind of tried to ignore it for the first year. And then that's when Micah and his mom sat me down, and they kind of did like an intervention. And I was really anti prescription medicine unless it was absolutely necessary. So she was, you know, really great about saying, listen, there are a lot of alternatives I can get you on that I think you'll notice a difference right away. And then we talked about, you know, and at that point, I just found out a month prior that I was pregnant with Capri. So then add that into the mix, and it was like, oh, my God, here I've been, like, going through, you know, depression, postpartum depression, and now I'm pregnant again. And I knew I wanted to, but I didn't know that I don't think I necessarily wanted them that, like, to get pregnant that quickly. And so I was freaking out, and so she suggested that I start with a supplement called SAMI. And it was safe to take while I was pregnant. So I took that the whole pregnancy, and it was a completely different experience. You know, when London was born, I was more afraid and almost like, what am I supposed to do with this baby? But when Capri was born, I just bonded with her instantly, and I was so excited, and I felt so much joy, and I felt like the feelings that I thought a new mom should feel.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and of course, then I had all the guilt, like, oh, that's not fair that I didn't feel this way with London. But it's not something that you can help. It's hormones. And
yeah.
So I think, you know, a lot of women out there have contacted me, and they go through the same thing where they have all this guilt. And I tell them, you know, I was right there feeling the same way. But you can't feel guilty because it's not you. It's your hormones. And they're, you know, they're just out of whack.
Oh, yeah. Well, you've had two beautiful children, and you are so beautiful yourself. How do you keep yourself in shape, and, like, what is your daily routine? Because you just look gorgeous. You look like, you know, like you're 20 years old. You're just beautiful.
You're too kind. Definitely not. I was 20, but thank you. You know, it's funny. I don't really have like a daily routine, just because my kids are still so young. Mm-hmm. But I'm trying to get back into working out. And I know there's gonna be a lot of women out there that hate me because I don't really work out that much. But I am blessed with really good genes and a high metabolism. But I do eat very healthy, and I drink a ton of water. I think drinking water is one of the best things I can tell any woman out there, or any man as well, and children to do, because it not only is it hydrating and keeps your skin very tight and glowing, but it's great just to flush your system out and for digestion and everything. So I drink a ton of water. And I've always been into fitness. I've always been very active. I used to play soccer and tennis, and I love to snow ski and water ski and all that stuff. So But I don't, you know, since I've had the babies, I haven't been really, really crazy about working out. I used to walk a lot with London, and now having two, it's a lot more difficult. But this morning I did a Zumba class, and that was really fun because it's just like you're dancing and having fun, so you don't really feel like you're working out. So I'm really into Zumba right now. Yeah, so you should try Zumba if you've never tried it. But other than that, I don't really have like a set, you know, routine for working out. I do, you know, we go to the beach or we go for walks a lot. But I do have like a set skincare regime that I do, and I've never really let my face get in the sun. So I think that's a really important thing, especially for young girls, to start early is always wear hats and always wear sunscreen. I always, you know, had the biggest hat on and tons of sunscreen. And I was the girl that would go to the beach and have a big towel over my face and let my body get sun, but not my face. So I think
you were the smartest one on the beach.
Yeah, I didn't, you know, I didn't look very good, but
skin, and you would stay, you know, this beautiful skin.
Yeah, so I think that's really, yeah, it's really important to wear your sunscreen. And you know, and we do need, my mother-in-law actually says, you know, you should get 10 minutes every day without sunscreen just to get the vitamin D. But if you're going to be out for long periods of time, you should definitely wear sunscreen. But other than that, I, you know, I do Botox, and I think that helps. It keeps me looking younger. And I started, you know, pretty young doing the anti-aging eye creams and some of the anti-aging moisturizers and night creams. And I think that's important, is just to start things young and keep doing them, and doing antioxidants and taking like a daily fish oil and taking a daily antioxidant, or just, you know, eating your blueberries and pomegranate, mm-hmm. that kind of thing.
I'm writing all this down, you know.
You're so cute. Well, I have my own YouTube channel, so I do weekly videos, although I haven't put one up this week, which I'm sorry. A lot of people have been contacting me saying, where's the video this week? But with Easter, we were so busy, I didn't get a chance to film anything. But I do a lot of videos that I tell some of my secrets and things that people can do.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, you'll have to give us that information. I wanted to ask you about your new reality show project that you're working on. I heard the name of it is MILF, M-I-L-F.
It is MILF, but it's M-I-L-P-H, and I'm glad you asked about that, because a lot of people were tweeting me and texting and Facebooking and all that stuff and saying, really, is it MILF? And I said, no, it's M-I-L-P-H, which is Mothers in Life. It stands for Mothers in Life, Passion, and Health. And, you know, there may be the name's not completely in stone, because we've gotten a lot of mixed feelings on it. A lot of people love it because it obviously catches your attention. And but then a lot of people are like, oh, it makes me think of, you know, the negative connotation of it. So, but it's a mom show, and a lot of the press that's been around right now, they don't really have the complete correct information. But I think I had seen some stuff on Twitter saying that it was like a reality show about me, but it really is a reality show about eight different moms that all have their own unique individual problems, and I'm hosting the show. So I'll be the host, and it's kind of like if you look at The Bachelor, and you've got Chris Harrison, and he's the host, and that will be my role. So I'll be hosting it and bringing these ladies their daily routines and their challenges, and because what the basis of the show is these women are, you know, somewhere along the way they've gotten kind of off the path of balancing motherhood and perhaps a career, or motherhood and their relationship or friendships or whatever it may be. So we're taking them on a retreat, and they learn to become more balanced moms, and they work through their issues, and we have life coaches that help them, and we have physical fitness trainers that help them, and they have, you know, challenges that they have to compete against each other with. So I'll be hosting it, and I'm excited for it. It's going to be a great show. It's going to be very empowering to women, and, you know, it is reality, so I'm sure there'll be a few, you know, a few tidbits of drama, but it's the outcome of it will be getting these moms back into a more balanced motherhood and position than they were before.
It sounds like a great idea. I mean, a great show, because there really isn't anything like that. I mean, there's the soap, all different kinds of shows, but there's nothing like that. So that sounds like a really great show that you're working on.
Yeah, I'm excited, and I think it will help a lot of women, and it will be fun to watch. It'll be, you know, because every mom has, you know, their own issues, and there's the moms that are, you know, that are the career women, and they're struggling because they don't have a lot of time with their kids, and then there's the single moms that are trying to get back in the dating world, and, you know, or maybe they've got too many dates, and then, you know, we're going to help them to balance, like, okay, you don't need to bring, you know, a different guy home every week. So there's so many different scenarios that, and different types of moms that will, you know, fit into this.
Well, that just sounds great, Peggy. I'm really happy that you were able to call in and give us a little bit of your time today in between your photo shoot. I really, you know, I want to thank you for being our guest tonight. This was just great. You know, it was so great to talk to you.
Oh, thank you. It's my pleasure. I'm so glad I got a chance to talk to you, too.
And would you please come back again sometime and let us know how your new show is going and your other projects that you're working on? And
definitely. I would love to.
Okay.
Yeah. I would love to. And definitely, you know, just everyone can, you know, follow me on at Peggy Tanos on Twitter or Peggy Tanos Entertainer on Facebook. And I'm always updating what I'm doing, and there'll be information on the show. And like I said, I usually post my YouTube videos up there every week. So you can get a hold of those and look at those through my Facebook or Twitter, or just going on to, you know, YouTube. I have my own channel. So.
Oh, great. All right. Definitely going to be checking that out. Okay, great. Well, thank you so much, Peggy. It was great talking to you. And, you know, have a great evening, and hopefully you can come back again soon.
Sounds great. Thanks, Marianne. Have a great night.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I think she just called you Diane, Betty. And
well, that was very interesting, and it was fun to hear about her new show that's coming up. That was fun. Well, Betty Ann, now we're lucky we get to hear about Lisa's trip to Spain.
Oh, yeah.
All right, Lisa, let's hear all of it.
Yes,
we loved every picture.
Well, everybody, I guess everybody knows I am. My son's studying in Spain, like Betty Ann's daughter did last year in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
And so we decided to go surprise and see him over Easter. And it was beautiful. Madrid is a beautiful city. The architecture is gorgeous, very clean. A couple things I wasn't crazy about: the food.
Why not?
I don't.
What was it like?
The breakfast was fabulous. The breakfasts were good. What they're real big for is ham there, and prosciutto.
Sure.
But I don't like ham, but I like prosciutto. And
wait, Lisa, didn't I warn you about the food though?
Yeah, you did. You said your daughter said it was terrible.
Yeah. So,
yeah, well,
I'm not surprised that you said that.
I was going to give them the benefit of the doubt, but it was bad.
And
I had paella one night. Which
we
was like
saw the picture.
Dish.
It looked delicious.
Well, yeah, it looked delicious until I skeeve like chicken with bones and stuff. I like my little, you know, nice chicken breast, nice and thin, white meat.
Yeah.
No, as soon as I dug into it, it looked like vegetable.
Ew.
It had like some, I don't know if it was the back or the neck or the something, like weird pieces of chicken in it.
Ew.
I couldn't enjoy it. It was disgusting.
Well, you know what? One thing about the chicken there, because I remember when I was in Europe, they don't have good chicken like we have. Their chicken is like scrawny, and there isn't much on it. So that's probably why you were tricked. You thought it was something else.
Well, speaking of chicken, I'll never forget when I was in Australia. We had pizza, just cheese pizza, but it tasted like chicken.
Ew.
It was bad.
Bad.
Okay, Lisa, back to Madrid.
All right, go ahead. Back to Madrid.
In all of the, like, little delis, you see, a pig leg hanging up. That's their thing.
Ugh.
Pig leg.
Many of them.
Wait, with the hoof on it. The hook's
on
it.
No.
They're hanging up in all the... Yeah, they are. I put pictures on Facebook. I don't
know. Yeah, we saw it. There were like 10 of them.
Yeah, it's everywhere you... You know, it's like a cute little deli. but you see the pig's leg with the hoof.
What do they do with that? Make soup, or what do they do?
No. I guess they cut it off for, like, the prosciutto. I guess that's...
Oh.
Like yeah. Yeah. And then what they're known for also is squid sandwiches, fried calamari sandwiches.
Oh.
Isn't that weird? on a happy note, their metro is fabulous. The metro is absolutely fabulous. Clean.
You like it better than New York's?
Yeah.
Oh.
It's clean. It's efficient. It's on time. It's fabulous. The metro was wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And what I thought was very odd, now they, like, their McDonald's and their Starbucks, they're all real jazzy. Like, they have, like, plush couches in them and fancy, like, chairs. I mean, not like ours. I mean, like, very nice. They make it like a little fancy, like a little restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
But we went to Starbucks. Every table, people left their dirty cups. The trash can was right there. Maybe that's their custom. They make, you know, the people that work there clean it up. But we couldn't find a table. Every table had dirty cups and napkins, you know, with stains on them. And nobody just threw their stuff in the trash. So it was very odd. Very odd.
Mm. So tell us about tea.
Oh, we went to Tea at the Ritz, which was lovely. The Tea at the Ritz was absolutely—it was the fanciest hotel I've ever been in. It was just so gorgeous. It was €31 a person, which is about maybe about $42 a person.
Mm-hmm.
yeah, wow. You know, it was my daughter's 16th birthday, so what the heck. But like, we didn't finish everything, and I said, "Oh, can we please have it wrapped up?" And they said, "No." Okay. So like, it was all wasted. We couldn't take it home. So I stuffed some stuff in my handbag, but it got ruined. You know, got smashed in my handbag.
With crumbs all over.
Oh, yeah.
So what was the highlight, Lisa? The palace. You loved the architecture.
I love looking. I just took a million pictures of buildings because I just think that's so fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
We went for a tour of the Royal Palace. They say the royals don't really live there. They just go there when there's like heads of state, you know, just state dinner or something like that. We did that, and the beautiful sunsets in Madrid. We went to see a sunset on our last night there.
And the flamenco dancers.
Oh, yeah, I went to saw flamenco dancers. And one
That's
of the
cool.
man, yeah, yeah. It was cool. It's a very intense dance. They're very intense. They really feel the music as they're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And
But the best part, surprising your son Joe.
Oh, my God, yeah, we didn't... Well, he told my husband and Summer just going to visit him, and Elizabeth and I decided the last minute to go. He started to cry when he saw us at the airport. He was so excited and happy.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, Lisa, he's over it now because his latest postings are he's off traveling to someplace new.
Oh, he's going to Barcelona. Yeah, he's on the bus right now. It was an overnight bus trip to Barcelona.
Fun.
Yeah, you know,
oh, we love all the pictures.
Comes home in a month.
Oh,
everyone
so
missed
so
you.
Fast.
What'd you say, Betty Ann?
I said, it gets by so fast, you can't believe that it's over.
I mean, he comes home in less than a month.
That's how it was. I remember when my daughter went to Rome, and she left at the end of January in the worst snowstorm we ever had. And then it was just like that. She was back in May. It was just so fast, and every weekend.
The Christmas decorations were up and now.
Yeah.
Well, my son's only in Montana. My son's only in Montana, but I told him I'd wait until the snow melts before I come to visit.
You're smart.
Oh, Lisa, I loved all your pictures. And Betty Ann, I remember talking to you about your daughter's study abroad also. Wonderful time.
It's a really nice experience for the college students. I mean, they get to experience the world. I mean, and when can you ever get to do that and just be a free spirit with nothing?
Never again. I want to get a job.
Yeah, and
right.
You're not married. You don't have children. You're free. You know, you have freedom, and you can enjoy it and take it all in. It's a great, great experience.
Yep.
Definitely worth it.
Well, gals, it's time to thank our sponsors. Think for Orthopedics. And remember, if you're interested in advertising on Chit Chat Cafe Live, you can contact us, chitchatcafelive@yahoo.com. We're thanking Corey King, our fabulous producer. Enjoy the Corey King Show every Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Artist First.
I'd like to thank our guests tonight, Dr. Stephen Craig and Peggy. I pronounce it Tanis?
Tanis.
Tanis. We're inviting you to join our archives. Just go to our webpage. Scroll down to the show you'd like to listen to. Like we had Mary Higgins Clark on a couple weeks ago. And just click on the date, and you can enjoy it while you're doing work on the computer. And, of course, we'd like to thank our lovely correspondent, Betty Ann, for joining us tonight.
Exactly. And we're thanking everyone for listening. I'm going to leave you with one of my favorite quotes from Albert Einstein. If you can't explain it simply, you don't understand it well enough. Well, good night, everyone.
Good night.
Night.